All right, welcome to the House of Tech podcast, where government meets business, where we discuss the future of technology as well. I'm Fred Chabest, the founder of Finder.
I'm Andrew Bragg, Senator for New South Wales.
Let's introduce our guest, Andrew. If you've ever been to Sydney or, I guess, you know, anywhere on the East Coast, really, you've probably been to a Merivale venue. Our good friend here, Justin Hemmers, the CEO of the Merivale Group. Welcome to the House of Tech.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on here.
Thanks for having us.
Your family really started in the fashion and retail business as well. Business has been, you know, a massive thing for you. We've had a really interesting time, you know, in terms of business right now. Andrew, do you want to start with the first question?
Well, I mean, this is a very exciting day for us because we get to have a chat to Justin, who's running a very significant business here in New South Wales. And one of the most important jobs I have in servicing my constituents is to advocate for the businesses and the people that are investing in our state and employing our people. And Justin does that very well. And so I think given we've just had 2 years of COVID, everyone is sick of COVID and talking about it, we're not going to dwell too much on that today. But I did want to open up to you, Justin, and ask about, well, now we're through COVID, we hope. What are the lessons from that? And how are things now in your businesses?
I've been in hospitality for 30 years now. And obviously when I first started out, I was incredibly passionate and excited about the industry. To go through what we've gone through with COVID for the entire hospitality industry over the last 2 years and come out of it in the shape that we're in now, you know, there's been incredible support from the federal government and state government, and I think they've handled the situation incredibly well. Now, coming out of it, I've never been more excited about the industry. I think we are going to come back stronger than ever. And what COVID has done, it's brought out our innate passion and desire to connect socially and to connect face-to-face and over food and alcohol and partying and dancing. So I think we're going to come back stronger because that desire has been suppressed for 2 years. So we're going to come back stronger than ever. And I've actually seen it in the last 2 weeks and also the previous non-lockdown period. The enthusiasm and the excitement from the customer to be back and to be in our spaces. And for the staff, they were so excited to have the guests back. So there's this renewed passion and excitement for the industry from both the customer and the staff. So I think we've got incredible times ahead. We've got all the stakeholders, council, state government, federal government, police, everybody's on the same page. So we have a fantastic opportunity to rewrite the books of hospitality. And I think if we do things right, we're going to have experience the roaring 2020s.
Your venues have all of a distinct brand and they all have an edge and a feel to them. Tell us about what's important for you when you're making a brand. There's a lot of people who are listening to this, obviously, are creating businesses. They're starting businesses right now. It's an exciting time. I mean, creating a brand is a really hard thing to do. Tell us some of the thoughts you go through in that.
You know, I think a feeling is brought about by a number of things, and that's what our business is. It's all about experience. So the experience is the look and feel of the venue. Now, that comes from my sister and I work very closely on all design. And every project that we do, we're heavily involved, the two of us. And we have another lady, Amanda, who works on every project with us. And then we have a handful of architects. There's sort of three key architectural firms that we work with. And we work with the same people within that firm for every project. So it's coming from us. You know, we're heavily involved. It's our style and our taste and our concepts. And we work with the same people. So there's always going to be that similar feel in terms of design and aesthetic. And then that experience comes from the quality of product and the service. And our staff are very passionate about the business. And they're very engaged. And they're very supportive. And they're like-minded. And they're incredibly passionate about our business and serving the customer. So the staff make the venue, we deliver the space, and great product, great service, and great atmosphere. So it's one philosophy for all venues. But every venue is different. You know, every venue has a different concept, a different design, a different product of food, different drinks, etc. But it's all encompassed by that one feeling of great service in a great atmosphere with wonderful staff. Yeah.
So what is going to hold you back then? I mean, you've set the scene, everything's looking pretty good, it's exciting. What are the things that are holding your business back and the economy back right now, do you think?
Great question, because there's obviously an incredible staff shortage across the industry. You know, COVID has been incredibly hard on staff in the hospitality industry. Job security under threat by lockdowns, you know. So other industries, tech industries, etc., have been booming. So if, you know, hospitality staff are not just people that stand in front of the customer and serve. We also have, you know, big head office operations. There's accountants, there's marketing people, there's graphic designers. And if your job is threatened by COVID, then they've got mortgages to pay, they've got families to feed. So it's easy to jump ship to an industry that's less affected.
Yep.
So that's been a big challenge for us, to keep our people and make them feel secure over the last 2 years. You know, we banded together to really work as one and look after our people and identify people that were out on a limb and needed further assistance. So we set up a lot of programs over the last 2 years to support our people. So we've come through, and I think we're more united and stronger than ever.
So have you lost people that you would regard as high performers, important to your business, to other industries that will never come back?
I don't think there's a situation where they won't come back, because I think we're now going to move into the hospitality industry. It's going to be one of the most exciting industries to work in. This is an inflection point in time where the hospitality industry is going to be the most exciting, I think, industry and tech, but to be in, and more exciting than it's ever been. So people will come back, but we have a huge shortage of talent at a very senior level, because we rely on overseas talent heavily. Some of my businesses are completely built around one or two people that we've brought from overseas. So I might get an incredible
like
chef.
Like cooks, yeah? Yeah, chef.
A chef, for instance. Yeah. So Danielle Alvarez, I got her from San Francisco, and she's such an acclaimed and well-renowned chef that it makes people want to come and learn and work with her. So that one person, she now employs 150 people, Australians, who want to work and learn from her and be part of that business. So we create businesses around talent as well. And without that talent coming in, then those businesses don't exist. So we need professional chef talent, sommeliers, etc., even managers. You know, you get an amazing talented manager from overseas. People want to work for them, you know, and learn from them. That talent, that's our TAFE. That's our hospitality universities, because there's nothing better than learning from someone who's so experienced. So we need to get those people in, and we need to attract them and welcome them with open arms. Now, this is the first time, I think, since World War II, that we have this incredible opportunity to say, come and live in this country, come and contribute to our economy, and come and contribute to our industry. We need to open the doors and open our arms and welcome these people in with a path for permanent residency. So they do bring their families and they do come and contribute to our economy. So there's those people that we build businesses on, and then we need unskilled workers as well. So the guys and girls that are happy to, you know, be in the kitchens and peeling potatoes and cutting onions and dicing tomatoes and cooking and being on the front line cooking, because it's very hard to fill those jobs with Australians. Now, you know, there was always a stigma in the past about visa workers taking the jobs of Australians. Well, I think we've just had the most perfect case study, a real case study, and it shows that visa workers aren't taking the jobs of Australians. We need those people as well. We've got 4,000 staff working for us now. I could do with 5,000 tomorrow. And if I have an extra 1,000 staff, which generally that would extra 1,000 would be visa workers. So normally we would have about 1,000 visa workers, and we've got 200. So we need more visa workers, and that means we can go from working, doing 5 days, lunches and dinners, to 7. The industry's held back, the economy's held back, because we can get another 30% out of operations if we had more workers coming in. So it's really important to the industry, because we rely on those people heavily, both for skilled and unskilled, and they need PR avenues, because they're bringing their life here.
Of course.
They're bringing their families, they want to set up, and we need more people.
This is one of the many myths we have to fight in public policy in Australia, and that is that foreign investment is bad and foreign people are bad. I mean, Australia would be dead without foreign investment and foreign people. And we've always been competing for the best brains, the best skills, and frankly, the most foreign investment that we can get, because we don't have enough people or enough capital to run our economy.
And we should be enticing them in.
Yes.
Absolutely, because that's how we improve. to keep improving your standards. You keep bringing in talent, we learn from them, and we continue to build and improve.
You talk, Justin, about the future of hospitality and how things have changed. And, you know, I agree with your thesis. I think everyone does that. You know, people want to connect it right now, and they want, and a great way to connect is over a meal or in person and talk face to face. It's, we've all been wanting that. But can you talk us, tell us about what you think is important and what things are needed for that future to be realized? Like, what are some of the things, and describe this vision of what you see coming up into, you know, the next 10 years?
Mm-hmm. You know, the hospitality industry for me, and what COVID has shown, is that that face-to-face connection will never die. And people want to be served by staff. A restaurant, for instance, you want to sit down, relax, and let them recommend the best things to eat or what to drink, and have that social connection. For me, technology is so important to the industry, but it needs to be a facilitator and help us serve the guest as best we possibly can, so that we know what our guests like, and break down any friction points, for instance, payment. The worst thing in a restaurant, you've had a fantastic meal, those last few minutes when you want to get the bill, and if you're waiting 5 minutes to get their attention to get the bill, it can ruin your entire meal. How do we fix those tension points with technology? To me, is the greatest part that technology can play in our industry. Because what I never want to do is take away that connection, that magic, meeting people at the bar, meeting your future wife, meeting your future husband. Those things are so exciting. You don't want to take away from that. You know, when there's some great innovations like Me and You, which serve a fantastic purpose, because they suit, if we have a big beer garden and, you know, you've got to go all the way over there to get a drink. If you're engaged with the people you're at the table with, you can order online and the food drinks come to you. So you have that choice. So you can have that separation with the server, or you can have that connection. Mm-hmm. So what COVID has done, I think it's fast-tracked some of these wonderful systems like Me and You. And it's fast-tracked them because it suits a purpose and people want that. So how do we use technology to improve the experience and give you choice as well? Mm-hmm. It's really important.
So, and what else can government do, do you think, to support hospitality getting back on its feet? I mean, I hear you about the labour laws and the shortages of labour, but is there something else that we could do that is a lesson from the pandemic? Or,
well, as I said before, I think both federal and state governments have done an incredible job under the circumstances. You know, we've had a hopefully once in a lifetime pandemic, and you know, our industry, in particularly New South Wales, has survived it as best possible. I think the limited lockdowns. Lockdowns obviously are the hardest thing for us because it's zero income.
The end, yeah.
And yes, we can mobilise and change our business model, but you know, we want to keep all the staff employed. So the government, I mean, JobKeeper, I think, was one of the most fantastic incentives the government could have done, and it kept our staff employed by us, not standing in a line to pick up a payment. They were still employed. So psychologically, I think that played such an important role in the success and the reason why we are in such a strong position now.
To bounce back, yeah. It was a very liberal solution.
The
yeah.
support was incredible, and it kept people engaged, it kept them employed. It meant they had cash in their hand and they were spending it. So it kept the economy turning. And if that hadn't have happened, we would have come to a grinding halt and we would be having a very different discussion today. New South Wales State Government has been incredible. The support to businesses, the support to the industry, to keep things moving, to keep the economy going, has been exceptional. So, you know, I think a pandemic is such a unique situation for hospitality because it is connection, you know. So I think under the circumstances, couldn't have done a better job.
Wow, it's a really tough experience. Obviously, this has been probably the biggest shakeup I could imagine for your business. What sort of are some of the new sort of resiliences or new opportunities you see? What's like, you know, brand new that maybe that's probably coming? Like, what have you got on your roadmap coming up? What's interesting?
Well, it sounds a bit boring, but more of the same.
Yeah,
but no, it is. But I'm actually more enthusiastic. I've mentioned this before, more enthusiastic about the industry than ever. And I realize that, you know, this horrible world pandemic can't destroy hospitality, and we will come back stronger than ever. Renewed passion and desire by people to dance, And, you know, it's quite amazing to see we've opened up our clubs again, and we've got some very large clubs that hold, you know, 3,000 people at a time. And these have come back stronger than ever. And interesting to see is that pre-pandemic, you know, when you'd look at the club from a, I can see this dance floor in the main areas from above, you would see a dance floor, people dancing, people standing around the bar chatting and talking, and people, you know, lounging and that. Now you look down, everybody's dancing. Everybody's dancing. So it's like a festival. So it's like everyone's come back, and as soon as they come in, they're dancing straight away. So I've never seen that in 30 years. So there's this pent-up excitement to connect through dancing and expression. So people are expressing themselves in a different way. And there's a wonderful vibe around. There's no tension amongst people. People were loving each other more than ever before. So I think we're going to come out better for it. Shame you have to go through that to experience.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But it's like a big reset button on society. And I see it in our venues.
Are you a good dancer, friend?
You don't need to be, because everyone's dancing.
Good. Like solidly, like solidly awkward.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Justin might keep me on the floor a little bit.
I reckon. My money's on him.
Really?
Yeah. But if you have the hat, I think you get special points.
Well, you know. I'm a hat dancer.
Are you? Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things we do with this podcast is we, you know, try and talk about some other things. Mm. Now, Fred is, I call him Mr. Serious, because he's always trying to, you know, he wants me to just to focus on the books and the words, and but I'm a bit more colourful than, you know, you are, people suspect.
Very colourful.
So we have this thing about trying to decipher what strange things from America are.
Yeah.
You've just come back from America, so I think you might have the inside word on this. But we're trying to get a sense of what are home fries.
I have no idea.
You don't know? Potato?
Potatoes, and they're fried up, apparently.
Yeah.
Home fries.
You know when you go into an American diner?
I know what fry animal style.
And they say, here are some home fries.
It's not what you're thinking. It's home in fries. And out animal style.
In California.
Yeah. So you don't know.
I imagine it's just French fries, isn't it?
I think so. But why are they called home fries?
No one's asking for home fries here in Australia.
Not yet.
That's interesting. Mm. Fascinating. Mm. I have another question on that. In America, there's obviously a lot of trends of food that continuously come and go, you know, pop-up shops and those kind of things. Yeah. Do you experiment with things like that? Do you take trends in your menus from overseas?
Well, I'm not really into trends. Mm. You know, I think food has been around since the beginning of mankind. Mm. And, you know, there are certain things that just aren't broken and don't need tampering with. Mm. But I would say Australia's in a very unique position because we have so many cultural influences here. You know, we're so close to Asia. So we have all those incredible different parts of Asia and Southeast Asia and influences from all those incredible cultures that really, their food is extraordinary. And all the spices and the herbs and spices that America doesn't really get that influence.
It's true.
And we also have all the influence from everywhere in Europe as well. You know, so we have, you know, all the Arabic influences and the Italian and French. So we have such an incredible mixing pot and melting pot here of different food cultures. And so we have fantastic representations of all those styles of food in this country. Now, that's very, very rare. There aren't many countries in the world that can say they have such a diverse offering at such a high quality. So I think, you know, the food scene in Australia is one of the best in the world because of that mix and the diversity of offerings and the cultural mix within our country, which goes back to what our country is building on and how we develop and continue to grow is by inviting those cultures into our country and supporting them to support us.
I mean, I grew up in northern Victoria, and the most diverse cuisine you could find there would be the local Chinese shop. But, you know, you walk around Sydney today and you can, and that's an obvious point to make. But I would say that when you go to the States, so you still get some pretty good tucker there. I mean, and I'm always struck with how fresh the food would look as well. I mean, my sense is that the food is still quite good and the portions are massive. They What's the go with that?
They struggle with produce, quality of produce.
Do they?
Yeah, very much so. Whereas Australia, we have some of the best produce here on our doorstep, seafood, beef, all the vegetables and herbs, and we grow a lot of that here. We certainly have the advantage of the produce and the freshness of produce and the quality of it.
What's been, obviously, in the supply chain challenges, what's been hard to get and what's been relatively okay?
Price of protein has gone through the roof, obviously, with all the challenges. See, even the workforce in the supply chain has been such a huge impact on pricing. So it's pushing prices through the roof. I think it's just that a shortage of staff across the entire nation, particularly in hospitality, has really put a lot of pressure on pricing.
Do you have a preferred cuisine?
I love everything.
That's not an answer.
I know, but it depends on the day.
Well, I'll tell you mine then. I'd probably be Japanese or Greek. That'd be my... What about you?
I like French food.
Do you?
I do like French food.
That's why he's going to Felix.
But, yeah, you're going to Felix.
I'm going
tonight,
to Felix
right?
on my birthday.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's a good
I've got
joy.
To ask. That's a good joy. So here's
he didn't answer the question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'd say my death row meal would have to be an Asian influenced meal.
Okay,
Asian spices and.
I mean, you could be a poly with an answer like that. That's a very broad answer because it could be. Something from Sri Lanka. It could be a Sri Lankan curry. It could be Japanese sashimi. It's a lot of. It could be Indian. Yeah.
We have a question we ask everyone. So wanted to ask you if you had an opportunity to travel to space right now, would you go?
No.
Why is that?
I love it here, and there's no totties up there either.
Yet.
And no beautiful water to swim in.
Yeah. Well, our last guest has been offered to go, and he also declined it. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Would you go?
I'd go.
You would go?
I'd go on the first. I'd do anything to go.
Yeah, I don't think...
Really?
I don't think you wouldn't be able to wear the hat. They'd have to...
They'd change the hat?
That could put a hole in the spacesuit.
Get a different hat?
No, we would put a hole in the spacesuit.
If I had another hat, I'd be all right.
It's so good here. Why would you want to...
Just to see something. It would give you a perspective that when you came back, you would see the world slightly differently.
Yeah.
And that then you would appreciate and be grateful for what there is as well.
Absolutely.
You take things away. And I think I felt that. I was recently in New York for 4 months, and it was, it was very challenging, and hospitality was, they have the outdoor seating now,
yeah,
which I think is quite nice and innovative. You know, people want to sit outside now in New York, which is new. You've still got the indoor and outdoor, so there's sort of an innovation. And that really was facilitated by the government there locally as well, which is quite interesting.
Government is
which
doing
is
good.
Same as happening here too.
Right. I think the thing I learned, but from that was it was a very different New York, and obviously every city I've been to, but particularly different. And it actually removed a lot of things from that city, which really baked that culture like you talked about. And people weren't meeting as much in person. Mm. You'd be in the same city and yet still meet digitally.
Oh, is it? Right.
which is unusual. But I did notice, obviously delivery had gone through the roof. You could get almost anything delivered.
Yeah.
Although again, it took that element of what you talk about is that person to person connection. And maybe that's why, space doesn't seem like a place where you'd
enjoy it much. Sort of goes against everything.
A couple of people. Yeah. We'd have a meal every night together.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew would be funny, actually, at that
one. You could go to the International Space Center. There's a few people there. There might be four or five.
Yeah.
If you went to the moon, I don't think there's that many people that have been there. I did want to say, Fred's described New York without sort of, people and without pizzazz.
Yeah.
I don't think many people could imagine Sydney without your enterprises, and I think you do a great service for our state and our people by providing those services. And I think whether you're a dancer or not, I think people are very grateful to have your dedication to those magnificent venues. So,
well, it's wonderful to see, particularly this week, people back in the city walking around, because for 2 years, with the exception of the period that we weren't locked down, I was going into the office every day. And
it's like Canberra,
a ghost town.
Yeah, like Canberra.
Would not see a human, and it was horrifying. I mean, I can't explain the feeling to walk into our city, and a city that I'm so passionate about and love so much, and to not see a human walking the street was horrifying. And to see it back now, and people have a skip in their stride despite the weather, they still have they're still happy to be back.
Yeah, how much longer is it going to rain for? Do you think?
I don't have control over that.
Okay. Well, I like that.
But it's great to see people back out.
I like to ask
out.
The probing questions because Fred's a bit of a softie, you know. He's a serious softie.
I can see that.
He's a serious softie.
A wilting flower.
Yeah. You got to probe people.
I'll work.
It's like Senate estimates, only I'm on the other side of the table.
I'm a work in progress.
The same side. I'm still asking the questions. Yeah, I've got to try and keep up.
Thank you so much, Justin, for joining us on the House of Tech. And, you know, like Andrew, I wanted, if I can, try and add is, I don't think Sydney would be Sydney without, you know, your business and what you contribute. Thanks. It just wouldn't be Sydney. That's going to wrap us up here. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And for everyone else, obviously, you can grab the show notes at finder.com.au/House of Tech. We'll put some links on there. Have a look at the Merivale Group and all the incredible restaurants and bars and venues there. Check those out. And we won't be seeing you in space, Justin.
Not anytime soon.
No.